Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is Extracting the Important Lessons from the Executive War College 2024. The presenter is Robert Michel, Editor-in-Chief, The Dark Intelligence Group, Spicewood, Texas.
I want to thank you all. This has been a very rich learning experience for me over the last few days, and I sense there's a very high level of energy, that most of you seem to have found some new networking, you've been collaborating, and you've got resources that will be of benefit to you as you go back into your lab environments, and you also have lots of information and ideas that you can implement coming through. So, you know, in the 15 minutes or so that I have here, I like to try and tie together some themes because we've thrown a lot of content at you. We've had, like, with tomorrow's breakout sessions, we'll have had 90 presentations, probably 140 lab experts at the podium as either panelists or speakers. I don't know any place else where you can get in 2 to 3 days this kind of concentrated innovation in the management and operation of clinical labs, pathology groups, and genetic testing activities. So just to give you a little walk through and see if we can create a linear path from all the things you've heard, you were very fortunate to hear Lila White open up yesterday, CEO of Xiphon. I want to let you know that when she started Xiphon about 1999 as we would describe it today, a cloud-based RCM service, most of us wondered, you know, where does this go? She now has approximately 200 labs and submits about 80 million claims a year out of Xiphon. They're electronically hooked up to all 5,000 health plans in the United States. And so I mention that to you because her comments about what the drivers are, what the trends are, where the opportunities for labs are, come from somebody who's watching which labs are doing well with claims and reimbursement, which labs are not. And of course, many of you have become familiar with Xiphon's lab indexes, to which not only she, but a few other people showed samples of. Then, if I go through our lineup yesterday morning, do you realize how privileged you were to have Tim Stenzel tell you that there probably shouldn't be a lawsuit by the lab industry given the final rule that the FDA has approved? That's a great insight because he was inside the FDA through December and he had a hand in understanding how the draft rule was being constructed. I would make a couple of observations to you about Tim's comments and his belief on how this will affect. First of all, the rule grandfathers all the existing LDTs. Now, if you take Concert Genomics' 160,000 genetic tests in their database, that means there's not going to be a whole lot of disruption to existing labs with LDTs. The second thing is the academic labs can continue to use LDTs the way they traditionally have. I would suggest to you that is the FDA responding to the comments that were submitted to the draft rule, that there were approximately 200 academic pathologists who signed a joint letter, as well as some of them sending individual comments in, and they were making a very clear argument that LDTs in clinical research and teaching situations are very essential to moving our diagnostic technologies forward. Reynolds Salerno, this gave you a real opportunity. He talked a bit about the CLIA reform movement, and one of the reasons that I had him come is I think many of you, had you been unaware that there were efforts to reform and update CLIA, would like to put your own 2 cents in and talk to your own lab scientists and make them aware of this. So it gets a wider industry input for the CLIAC committee. And Dr. Salerno said he was very appreciative of that kind of exposure, and he welcomes all of you to tune in to the various CLIAC opportunities to provide contents, the conference calls, et cetera. And also, you know, there's some progress. Reynolds Salerno told me that once COVID hit, labs had a whole different level of credibility within the CDC and with Health and Human Services. One of the outcomes of this is that the Division of Laboratory Systems is working to connect public health labs electronically to your local labs so that when you want to report specimens that need to be tested and get the results back for those that are mandated by law, you have the same kind of digital interface for submitting and receiving that you normally have with your primary reference labs. These are the kind of value propositions that are happening within the Division of Laboratory Systems. Then the other thing was educational resources. He's very proud of a lot of things that are on the DLS website that would allow your team to understand better the CLIA regulations and some of the requirements. Gabriel Bienwillner, Palmetto GBA, MolDX, and Z-Code program. Once again, you had a real good tour of how the Z-Code program is designed to operate, what are the best ways for you to submit your assays for assessment and review to obtain a Z-Code. This is the kind of thing you don't find in too many other venues. And then I'm just going to take kind of a grab bag of yesterday's sessions. I was very intrigued with autonomous robots as they're being used by Advent Health's lab, you know, there in Florida. We had comments on using real-time analytics. Our colleagues at Ochsner Health here in New Orleans have actually reduced readmissions because they've used real-time analytics to reduce the number of false positives on sepsis. Some of you might have sat in on Rich Cornell's presentation about pathologist productivity and income and what's happening to wages and productivity programs within pathology groups. Some of you might be interested to know that some pathology groups are paying a $100,000 signing bonus to attract a pathologist. So if you think about your own pathology group and your own hospital settings, how upsetting would that be to some of the pathologists to know that competitors are paying a $100,000 signing bonus? And then we had Lab 2.0, Dr. Crawford from Northwell Health talking about that. Bronson Health out of Michigan is still using Lean to great effect. And you know that we were one of the first programs in the United States to bring Lean in hospitals and lab to you in 2003. Although it kind of falls into the background, I can guarantee you that there's a large number of labs, hospital-based as well as private labs, that continue a very strong Lean culture. Well, if we look at this morning, Michael Simpson, I think, gave you a really interesting overview of how labs around the world, not just in the United States, but some of the European countries in particular, are beginning to put data together with other sources of data to create information and actionable kind of advice out of that. And I think one of his comments, you know, is things are shifting away from your focus on the analytical stage. That's been the traditional concentration of lab management. Are we getting an accurate, reproducible result? Are we reporting it within our allotted turnaround time, particularly in a hospital with stat testing, et cetera? And more, even in hospitals, it's what is the lab going to do with the data that improves the patient outcomes and can bend the cost of care curve? Just out of curiosity, did you find our panel on artificial intelligence today helpful? So I want to thank Ajit Singh and Leo Grady and Joseph Mosel. He came here from Israel, by the way, and Michael Simpson for that. I've set this up, and we're going to do the full workshop tomorrow on AI, because guess what, team? Every analyzer, every instrument, every service solution that's coming your way to your lab, the vendor's going to tell you that it's got AI baked inside. You're going to want to understand what kind of AI is it, you know, natural language processing, deep learning, machine learning, etc. And you're also going to want to know, how's it been trained? What's the data set? Can I trust it? Because I like what they're presenting with me as to how they've developed it. So I hope that that panel discussion and that freewheeling conversation is going to help you become, should we say, a shrewder buyer of AI solutions as they come your way. So let me close up with this. I've got a few insights for you that I've collected out of today's meeting this week. Number one, I think you've got powerful evidence that the forward-moving labs in the United States are increasingly moving away from a focus on the analytical phase, and they're now beginning to consider the analytical phase as just one more step in producing a product, which is clinical lab data, lab 1.0, but now the attention is on what are we going to do with this data, what other data sets can we match to create useful intelligence, and then how can we interact with physicians, with our parent health systems, with patients. Remember, consumers are out there. We didn't do a lot on consumers this time. And also with the payers. And I would suggest that in your communities, you would be well served to go to the human benefits managers of the larger self-insuring corporations in your cities and talk to them about the value of lab testing and diagnostics to bend their cost curve. The next thing is lab automation. You know, the first hospitals that put in total lab automation was 1997. We had South Bend Medical Foundation here. We had Mount Sinai out of New York. And what happened is by 99 and 2000, instead of TLA, islands of automation really was what was happening through most of that decade. I would suggest to you that as you look at what's been unfolding in the marketplace with the major IVD companies, you might say that lab automation has reached a rather mature level. In other words, no vendor's solution offers significantly different benefits and or workflow productivity than the others. And so this means also that you have more time to put into what do you do with the data. If there's any areas of automation you're going to watch, I think microbiology still has a lot of ways to go before it becomes fully automated. Some of you have the Copan Wasp and the BD Kiestra systems in place. And then histology. You want to watch a company called ClaraPath out of New York. We had them present last year. They're attempting to design an automated histology system that would do about 30 steps in histology. If you think about what happens with automation, one of the objectives of automation is to reduce manual variability from one worker to the next. And so ClaraPath's potential essentially is, can we eliminate the variability of the different histologists as they work with the tissue as it goes through the lab and create something that's very consistent? Think about how microbiology automation plates the same plate, the same way, and the same pattern every time, eliminating that variability. And then, you know, I would close again with the new game in diagnostics and lab testing, it's data. And it's data that you accumulate and put together and create actionable intelligence. That's the term I like to use. So that the doctor says, I didn't get more than just a test result. I got a path forward that gives me confidence. And I would suggest that all of you that didn't sit in Michael LaPosada's afternoon workshop today should get that audio recording and the PowerPoint. Some of us have known Dr. LaPosada since the mid-90s when he burst forth with his "How does a lab add value to doctors who don't know how to order the test or interpret the results?" Well, he managed to get a $9 million grant from a foundation in Galveston, partly because one of the board members had a coagulation disease. And as they were interacting with Mike LaPosada, he said, hey, there's a better way to diagnose this. So part two of the journey on these diagnostic management services that are now operational at UT Galveston, They have been automating all of the data on the different disease states and all of the paper references. And they now have one person who can make 100 diagnoses a day into their diagnostic management system. And over the recent years, Dr. Lapisotta talked about 3 or 4 CPT codes that are now specifically attached to this, so that his diagnostic management service at UT Galveston Medical Branch now is generating revenue and is self-sustaining. And I think this is a very exciting way to the future, because he points out that most doctors cannot stay up with all the new tests, let alone most doctors cannot understand how to interpret, let's call it, the final results that a lab delivers. So overall, I think that you've had a very wide-ranging opportunity to see what's happening strategically in healthcare, in clinical diagnostics, and in informatics and AI. And on the other side, you've had an opportunity to speak to legal experts, managed care contracting experts. We've had our annual CLIA assessor panel, so you got to hear from COLA, CAP, A2LA, and the Joint Commission. So we're trying to cover all the bases for you and give you a complete, up-to-date view of your world of lab medicine, and then to send you forth as apostles and have you carry the mission and the message out there. So with that, I'd like to say thank you for all your support. The staff here really appreciates your polite nature, your cooperative, collaborative ways that lab people are always known for. I hope the hotel has given you an experience that meets your expectations. And I'll say, let's get together again next year, April 29th and 30th, and we'll do another version that's updated for Executive War College 30. Think about that. I've been doing this for a third of a century. It's quite something to look back on all of that. So I will wish you all safe travels, good health, and much success in your laboratory environments. And if any of us on the staff can do anything for you, please reach out and let us know. There we go. Adios.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.